down to brass tacks. Hello.
Good afternoon to you, Mr. Ellis. How do you do?
I am okay.
Yeah, my thing about it is, right, they have a canteen, and people have to pay rent. But you know something? Some of the things that a canteen sell, right, is what the students really want. Because at college, they have people outside selling outside the college and the other gap selling the stuff. And the students just leave the canteen and go and buy the outside and the gaps and stuff like that, right? And these vendors usually bring the things that the students really want, right? Because in the canteen, they sell things that the students don't really want. I'm afraid that they got the black bananas or something, and the students just buy that. You got to go and book that there, like, in the morning at breakfast time, right? And if you bring the vendors inside, now, it's going to put a little bit of competition on those that run in the canteen. So, therefore, those that come on board inside the school now, they will go sell something that is different than what the canteen is selling, because, like, in government buildings, once they got a cafeteria or whatever, the people that sit them and paying this big law rent, and they got people with vans passing through and stuff, because in Warrens, some of the vendors has got to go a distance, right, in some car park and sell the food, and the staff has got to go out there to the vendors, right, to buy what they want. And then they got another building that give a particular woman permission to sell there because she just bring food strictly for the staff at that particular building, right? So they don't really bother because they don't have no cafeteria, no canteen in that particular building. So everybody that's got a problem, not everybody got to live. But at the same time, you know, they're protecting the children and stuff. But my main reason for calling you is that I know the price of shipping gone up, right? And there's a lot of extra import duties that's added on to the cost of the goods and signs. The cost of these duties is more than the cost of the product and stuff, right? And when they reach the third world countries, my it really licking it up, because, like, last week I bought oats and pomegranate juice and that sort of thing. And this week I gone back and the price is so hot. You know, I had to call them and ask them what really going on.
The price of what? The oats?
The oats, $10 or something cents for a pack of oats.
And the pomegranate juice as well?
Huh?
And the pomegranate juice?
Pomegranate juice? $5.99, which is $6. And I was paying $5.40 something last week. I don't know how it jumped there. And I didn't really check any bills. And for some reason, yeah, I had my bills. And when I looked back at it, I was like, this thing can't be for real. Right, but I can't understand how the price jumped. So you understand where I'm coming from? The thing's going up by $2 and $3 and stuff like that. And I was like, I can't believe that. And if you go to certain other markets, right? My girlfriend says she bought a tin of milk, and it was a dollar something. And when I bought the thing, it was $3. She said that's true. And when she went back to tell she wanted, it was an introductory price. And she said, no, boy, she ain't buying it.
A lot of supermarkets under a lot of stress, huh?
But it's true. They're under a lot of stress because a lot of people, 40% of the people ain't working, right? And it ain't a main sport. You don't working and you got to go there and buy these things at these hot prices and stuff. So you can be forced to do like the old time people, go back in your yard and plant up as much as you could, make your own oils, and the old people used to do the coconut oils and fry with it, get the lard from the animal fat and use it up. And you got to do something to survive, man. This thing is really, really ridiculous. And okay, there's nothing we can do in certain areas. You can't reduce the cost of the shipping, because I actually know, because from last year they tell you that the shipping is gonna go up. The scanners that had at the port, you got to pay for them too. You understand? And the cost, the foreign exchange going up at the post office, it was $1.50. And then it gonna hit 10 something, and it depends on who you bring it in and stuff. A laptop now costs nearly $1,000 now in comparison with the price you pay for it a couple in March and stuff. And I jumped, I said, well, I can't believe this. It's true, you gotta pay the 17.75% VAT when it get here, right? But don't forget, you gotta pay the shipping before it leaves the country of origin.
Okay,
right?
Ma'am. Thanks for calling and sharing your concern. This person writes, I wonder if people understand how much pressure Barbadians are under. David, I am a pensioner. I retired last year with the intention of relaxing and enjoying life with my wife of 46 years. David, COVID has turned everything upside down. I am now supporting my daughter with three children. Neither she nor her boyfriend. They were both self-employed, but now find themselves on the breadline because work has dried up. And if the work comes, payment is a major problem. The writer says it is serious. Somebody else says it is unfortunate that Barbadians are not being given the opportunity to determine our destiny by voting at a referendum, yea or nay to a republic. The Honorable Prime Minister should not deny Barbadians the opportunity to exercise our sacred right and make that solemn decision for ourselves. This is an historic event. Barbados becomes a republic only once, says that writer. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Hi, David. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon.
How are you doing, man?
I'm okay.
Good. I now get the chance to listen. I really didn't hear the program. Well, I hear it in part, but I couldn't put together anything. So I don't know if what I'm about to mention, if it was mentioned already. Mainly on what come in your 30, you break, right? Look, the two opposition parties, Bishop Astley Party, as well as the Democratic Party, they're talking about, there's word around that it's possible that they're looking for a word on the ground about a few by-elections, right? And Mr. Clark, Glenn Clark, one member, one if he push or if he jump. But whether
he was push or jump, he looked pretty happy last night. You know that when you have been a long-serving member of Parliament, not everybody gets the opportunity to actually leave politics on a high. Many of them leave politics with defeat.
No, I could agree with you, David. Now, when Glenn Clark looked back at his stewardship, I don't think Glenn Clark do bad at all as a minister. I really don't think so.
Glenn Clark, he was an MP, more so than a minister.
An MP, you know, he's not a pretty talker, but or a pretty speaker. But the truth is, Glenn Clark know the constituents, his constituents, and Glenn Clark was indeed, or is, because he didn't retire yet, a good MP. And the two ministries that I remember, Housing and Public Works, I don't think that Glenn Clark fail at those two ministries either. So Glenn Clark have, what you would say, a good track record. But I can say the same for Mr. Payne as a transport minister, right? Public Works Minister, sorry. And I think that is high time, right, that Mr. Payne, and I know because as soon as you touch or you mention certain names in this country or you decide to use your own brain to think, people come after you. I believe that even my MP, Ms. Ford, right, should save the country in other words, what I'm really trying to say is I think that there should be three by-elections on the same day.
Who else should go?
No, hold on, because I want to be very clear. St. Andrew, St. Thomas, and indeed Glen Clark constituents. I think all of them should be called in 90 days' time. I am serious.
So,
I don't really think Mr. Ellis, I don't really think Mr. Payne, his political career is virtually over. And Ms. Ford, I don't know if Ms. Ford could go much further in politics. Right? I'm not picking at Ms. Ford. I'm not cursing Ms. Ford. I'm not condemning Ms. Ford. But all I'm saying that I think if you want to bread your blood, I think now is the time. In midterm, I think now is the time.
Now that you look at the Barbados Labour Party, how would you look at the Democratic Labour Party in terms of how they should see this upcoming by-election?
I believe that this by-election coming up for the Democratic Labour Party should be a springboard to gauge their position on the token poll. And I also believe that in that particular constituency, the Democratic Labour Party never really fared well.
But these are different circumstances, some people may argue.
Right, normal circumstances, they never really fared well in that particular constituency. And I think that this is a good gauge for the Democratic Labour Party to test their mettle. That's my opinion, right?
That's true, but there are implications here. If they don't win this seat, the argument will be, well, they never won it
before.
And therefore, there's nothing to lose, some people may say. Then there are others who will say, but if you can't win this seat in these circumstances, it is perhaps a gauge of how badly off you are as a party, where you cannot get the argument to resonate with the country that the Barbados Labour Party has far too many seats and that there is a need for some opposition voice other than Joel Atherley's in the House of Assembly at this stage.
David, I'm glad that you just do the spring back, right? Because what you just answered the question perfectly. It should be a gauge to test the mettle of a political party at this time.
Should they run a newbie? Should they run somebody who is completely new? Or should they look for one of the old stagers and bring them back?
To be quite honest with you, right? I wouldn't really sense that I'm not a member of the Democratic Labour Party.
But you used to be. You got DLP in your DNA.
I used to be. And trust me.
DLP in your DNA.
You're
going to
wrap me up. I guess, yeah. But you got more DNA than you are. I should reverse that. So we got DLP DNA and we bloodstream.
Well, I certainly have never been so close to the Democratic Labour Party as you have been.
But that's a proven fact. I can't deny that. I got to live with that. But I will say this to you. I think I welcome the by-election, but I cannot tell or I have no influence at all in the Democratic Labour Party at this time to tell them who they should pick from who.
You got influence in the BLP? You speak as though you could speak with a greater degree of authority about the BLPs now?
Certainly not. Right? Certainly not. I don't have any influence at all in the Barbados Labour Party either. So you see me, I'm like the boy up on the burning deck. All right?
All alone.
By my lonesome. You know they had a song called Lonesome Me?
Lonesome Me. Yes.
All right, David. Thanks a lot, man.
Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Is this Mr. David Ellis?
Speaking.
Yes, sir. How are you doing, sir?
I am okay. And you?
I'm doing well, too, sir.
Mm-hmm.
I've been around just as probably as long as you. I know you well.
Mm-hmm.
First, I must say, concerning the Republic, you would have known since 1994 when Dame Billy Miller and the late Errol Barra had some talk in the House of Barbados, they're becoming a communist, when they were saying And the election in 1976 had the people scared too, because their core motors had a car that came in for the Governor General, and it said it came in for the Republic of Barbados. And actually, we were going communist. And that was the campaign in the 1976. I don't know if you remember that, but I was wrong with the big Daimler car that came in for the Governor General when the then opposition was saying it came in for the Republic of Barbados. So Republic talk wasn't yesterday, but they were saying Republic become communist. I think you were wrong.
That's one of the things that, the scare tactics that would have been used back then.
Back then. I think you could remember.
It was
that.
A different world back then, too. Remember, okay. We were still relatively fresh into independence.
Independence.
We were also.
Barry was speaking to Castro, he and Burnham.
Yeah, but we also had situations where some African states were having coups and that sort of thing.
Okay.
And there was, you know, Africa was in a greater degree of upheaval back then.
Okay.
And therefore, people were saying, but you know, this idea of being a republic, they were afraid that it meant that you would become more vulnerable in their heads. That's how they saw it back then. But the world has moved further and further away. And therefore, I don't see that there is any big issue with respect to Barbados becoming a republic.
I'm only drawing your recollection.
I suspect that there would be more support for it. No.
1974, this conflict of going to republic and the fears were there.
And how the fears were fanned.
Fanned, how they were pushed around.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I established that this fear was since 1974. And it started off on the push in the 1976 election. You can't forget that. Because you were wrong as long as I was. What I would say now concerning Mohamed Nasser, I think the only thing I can really appreciate him for, he has been consistent with his white talk. Mohamed Nasser is like a fellow who went on the dance floor and only know how to dance to one tune. And although everything changed, he's still talking the same talk. But Mohamed Nasser have to realize it wasn't the white people that was attacking him for having 7 cars on his lot, a car for every day. It was the black managers of the bank. They were the ones that was attacking him and saying he was too proud, he was too this, and attacking him. I was there, I know what I'm talking about. And obviously I know, because had it not for a white man, I would not been able to build my home. It was 2 black men that opposed me in getting the loan. So I don't understand. I've never had the conflict in Barbados with the white and black that I had in England and USA. We always had a class problem, not a white and black problem. I don't know if they're going to move Nelson and put Christopher Cushington there, because the white people have done a lot for Barbados. And I'm one to vote for that. I have said constantly that the married men should have been knighted long time ago, years ago when Gary Sobers got knighted, because they had done a lot for Barbados as well. We got a lot of white men who have done a lot for this country. So obviously, and I think when the suffering of black people was when black men became managers of the banks, that made a mess of our black people from progressing. Yeah. And I can call names of person.
I'm not going Hello? To dispute. I'm not really going to set about to dispute.
But I got facts. I was there.
I know what I'm talking about.
And I can bring...
I got you, but this is what I'm going to say to you. In all of this, stop and think about this angle. You did go through what you say you experienced. And that has helped to fashion the way that you look at it. But it is structure. It is the way that the society has been structured from a long, long time ago that makes it even very difficult right now to dismantle the way this thing has been structured. Indeed, you may well be psychologically a victim of how this society has been structured. Many of us are. We've come along basically accepting the situation, saying there's no possibility of change, and therefore you watch it play out in ways that are potentially dangerous. I am one of the people who feel that a lot of the things that you see happening on the ground may well have some of their genesis in this structure. So when you see people out there rebelling, you don't call it rebellion, you call it crime. But when you get underneath the surface of it, what you discover is an anger and a resentment to the fact that you do this and you do that and you end up nowhere. You look at other people who apparently should be moving further and cannot because the structure seems to keep them down, lock them down, make it difficult to move. You know, so when you say A, you really have to say B.
Yeah, I get another point to you.
Mm-hmm.
You remember there in the 70s with Muhammad Nasr and them, they were saying to remove the money out of Barclays Bank because the money was, slave money was paying to the bank. You will recall that nobody paying attention to them because all the business people and so, that was their main bank. Besides Royal Bank, that was their main bank. So nothing was not, he was paying to them. So the call of talking about moving money to the banks, that's a joke because it never paid with the understanding that the money was slave money was present to Barclays. It didn't worry. But it never happened so by CLICO. When they say take the money out of CLICO, because it was a black man running that, the money came out. I'm going to leave you there. Over now.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Well, that's your perspective. It is. It runs counter to what you might have heard from people like Muhammad Nasr repeatedly on this program, and there are others who would not hold your view. But as you talk about the commercial banks, you should be watching with great interest what has happened in the United Kingdom, where they have exposed this major scandal with how the commercial banks around the world have facilitated the movement of money in previous years. And I wait to see what is going to come of that particular matter. It is a major scandal which has been exposed here. Down to brass tacks.
Afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Hello, hi.
Hi. Your program has made so many twists and turns today. It is difficult to choose a specific topic. But I want to just, I'm going to start by dealing with the supermarket. You know, there's a lot of, how should I put it, strategies that are being employed into the industry right now. One that I take particular, I have noticed, let me put it that way, because I'm a lover of what you call banana bread. And I noticed that this particular supermarket, I could have purchased a loaf of the banana bread for about $6.45. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Recently, you can't get a loaf anymore. They're cutting it into slices and packaging it, two slices in a package for $4.45. Two slices.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just one of the examples you find that there's some shifts in the market and they're tinkering with the product. The
question is why?
To maximize on the profit.
Wow. That's your interpretation. You know, you remember I always say it is important to ask the question because I'm getting signals that for some of them, it is more than that. It is about really trying to survive because COVID has now gone on for so long.
I don't know how
in the circumstances you can expect that there. Life is a bed of roses for them because there are so many people out of work.
But I don't think it's a bed of roses for any particular industry.
Mm-hmm.
However,
that's correct.
The supermarkets in particular, I think they're still benefiting.
The supermarkets had the initial rush, and that gave you the impression that, wow, you know, they were the big beneficiaries. But I, looking at...
Are Russia still there?
Well, I am not so sure. First of all, in the area of vegetables, they have a lot of competition right now. I see a lot of people on the streets and stuff selling food. And, you know, the produce matters. So, I mean, I don't know if you've noticed it too. So that's one area in which I believe they have had significant change. Now, well, if not there, where is this growth? Where is it coming? Because you and I agree that a principal factor in all of this, people must eat. But it does not mean that they have to eat foreign food once people can go and buy stuff on the streets and go in the market and that sort of thing and cut and contrive and stuff like that.
So you believe that there are...
I feel they're under more pressure than they're saying. And but they, to a large extent, they don't get sympathy. There are various reasons why they don't get sympathy, and there are various reasons why they don't necessarily come out and tell you what the truth is, because they don't want to send signals that suggest that business is not as good as it used to be. I mean, some weeks ago, there was some discussion on it, but bear in mind that if it was bad then, it can't get better now.
Well...
But there's an assumption that, well, you know, they're doing well. Look, I don't know if you've heard of supermarkets anywhere in the world that are said to be doing exceptionally well in the COVID environment. I know people like Amazon and those people, they are making money.
Okay, I was going to bring them up, and they're in the food industry.
Because of their model. Their model of moving the food and stuff, and, you know, because people... There's another dimension to it too. People don't want, many people don't want to be too involved in this thing. You go to the supermarket if you have to. You don't want to be caught up in having to deal with all of this hand sanitizer and this and that and number of people around you. You know, people feel like, you know, so all of that plays into it.
Let me ask a question, Mr. Ellis.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of any international chains? Supermarket chains closing?
I haven't heard of them closing, but
Barbados closing.
I haven't heard them closing, but what I don't hear is the analysis that is coming from people who do that kind of review, saying that supermarkets are among the big beneficiaries.
Well, I don't think they're among the casualties, so they're holding their own. Let's leave it as that they're holding their own. Let me ask, I want to touch quickly maybe an area that isn't maybe your is out of your comfort zone, maybe the legal profession.
Mm-hmm.
You know, two Sundays ago, there was an article in the story in the paper with regards to potential homeowner that was swindled out of her life savings.
Yes.
Over $300,000.
Yes.
All right. Now, I find that we've been getting these type of incidents too often. And I would really, I'm calling for you to have a program with regards to the legal profession. Because I think we're having too many victims, too many casualties from this specific profession. Something needs to be done. I know if you're looking to, for argument's sake, get a loan, there's a check that is done called a credit check. So they have a file on individuals that have bad debt. I think we need to have something like that for the legal profession, especially. You know, something like an integrity bureau or something that you can, before you go and employ an attorney at law, you can either log in or you can, for argument's sake, like the credit check, and you can pay them a fee and they do a check on and find out if attorney A, B, or C has any issues against him before you get involved with certain unscrupulous attorneys. And I mean, in most cases, they're getting away with large sums of money. That's another thing. And getting, I mean, small fines or time. The least I believe any attorney should receive once is over $100,000, or for every $100,000, he should get 10 years.